Very special shoe.
Can I
really get stuffy? Yeah, you can get stuffy. I just don't want it to get too cold, because the older you get, the more sensitive you are to the cold.
It's 22, okay.
Okay, today is, 1 second, that clock is fast. Today is Monday, May 20th, 2013, and this will be the next to last shiur. I hope I'm correct. By popular demand, I'm saying shiur next week, Be'ezrat HaNotein Le'Yov Koach. So you'll see the announcement will read, this week it read the final shiurim, so for next week it'll read the final shiurim. Now, before I begin the shiur, I just want to mention that Lieutenant Colonel Rabbi Mark Wiener, my student who had been here when we spoke about renaming a Beis Medrash, so he sent me a cute idea that maybe Koiner al Yedei Shinui, and he told me the following story, that in the late 70s, the Beis Medrash in YU, the Harry Fisher Beis Medrash, was falling apart. And Henry Kaminer, Oliver Shalom, was the SOI president. And he mentioned to Rabbi Lamb how bad the Beis Medrash looks. And he spoke with Rabbi Lamb, and the next thing they knew, Mr. Gruss put up heavy money to refurbish the Beis Medrash. I think it was redecorating, and he says maybe Mr. Gruss was kind of ashamed al yedei shinui. Also, if you recall in my Sunday class, I mentioned Rabbi Dov Eliach and his work on Rav Chaim Volozhin, and I mentioned to you how he backed down on the halacha, the way Rav Chaim and Rav Chaim Volozhin, the way they will go, and then also it's ultimately the Rav, the way they view the halachic process and the relationship with the Shulchan Aruch. Rav Elyashiv and Rav Kamyevsky, I believe it was, in a footnote, told them not to publish it in such a sharp tone, because the Amayoritz will not understand it. So my Talmud, Dov Reifer, writes to me that Eliach deserves some credit, because he also put out a three-volume work on the Vilna Gaon, where he bitterly attacked the Chassidim and the Machloket, and the Hasidim were livid with his portrayal of his episode and their machlekes with the Goyen, and the Eliach refused to back down. So I have to say, I give him credit on that level. Finally, he tells me something.
So that's where he should have been lenient, but the other way he should have been
lenient. Say that, and I give. He said, Litvak, what do you want? And I have to tell you one other story. He writes to me that his father was a Talmud of Rabbaran in Skokie, and his father is scheduled to get smicha, and the day that his father had a meet with Rabbaran to get the smicha, Rabbaran calls him and tells him, get here early. So he gets there early, he gets the smicha, and Rabbaran says to him, as of 12 noon that day, he's no longer the Rosh Yeshiva of Skokie, he's been thrown out, and he can no longer sign a klaf on a Skokie letterhead. So he told him to get there early so he could give him smicha on a Skokie letterhead. So, all right, it's stories and stories, but what machloek is when you look back? But that's Jews. Chayam machloek it does, yesh machloek it hayom. And we all think we know it all. Yoni lent me a had a very interesting article on a, I knew about this, about a Gentile who was the American ambassador to Palestine, to the Jews. Water Crescent was his Gentile name. And he later becomes a Ger Tzedek here in Yerushalayim. Very fascinating story. Yeah, right. See, Rabbi Reuben knew the whole story. Here it is. But I just want to tell you one thing about Ma Mishpacha. It's a beautiful magazine, and it put Jewish Observer out of business. It's very attractive, but their intellectual honesty is 10 below zero. And I'll give you one simple example, and then I have to teach, but after this example, I get sick from this example. I would hear Agudah is bemoaning, if you read Bamishpacha, they're bemoaning the fact that the Jews were kicked out of Gush Katif, which is an unbelievable tragedy. Unless you live here, can you comprehend what it means? I knew three generations that lived in Gush Katif, grandparents, children, and grandchildren, and they were thrown out like dogs. And They're always bemoaning it. I'd like to see an article in Bamishpacha entitled "How Agudath Yisrael Made It Possible for Sharon's Government to Throw 25,000 Jews Out of Their Homes." When I'll see an article like that, I will purchase Bulimia at the Bamishpacha. Until then, I read it occasionally when someone throws it into the garbage and I pick it off and I say, all right, let's mezen vashteta. Okay, Yoni, you subscribe. I want you to send a letter quoting me, challenging them. Relic, the editor, he has moments of sanity and moments where you can't talk to him.
And Jonathan Rosenblum is Jonathan Rosenblum.
Say that Jonathan... I cannot mention his name in my house because he once wrote an article justifying why his children don't serve in the army. It appeared in Jerusalem Post and my Malka saw it. Okay, gentlemen, let's get back to the world of history where we can enjoy ourselves and not get aggravated. But I have to tell you inside already I'm upset because I spoke about Gush Katif. When I'll see an article in Bamishpacha, how Gaza can be sold in the center of Jerusalem due to Agudat Yisrael, then I'll say, wow, intellectual honesty, kala kavod. The founding of Yeshiva College, and the building of the campus, you see, until 1928, Yeshiva was a small institution on the Lower East Side. I mean, gehet from this, minishgehet from this, and that idea, they didn't enter into the American mainstream. Coming uptown with a magnificent campus, the most beautiful campus in the United States for any Jewish institution, and I believe that's true until today. The campus on that building, the beautiful original building, outshines any other building, be it JTS, be it Hebrew Union College, be it the University for Judaism. Nothing compares with that campus. Today, of course, the campus is expanded, and you have Lakewood has a tremendous campus. Baltimore is a city unto itself near Israel. But 1928, what that did, it entered the mainstream. Even the New York Times had to take notice. Now, life moves on, and life is a living organism. We can never stand still. We are constantly under challenge, constantly developing ideas, constantly trying to integrate Torah on the Western scene. And a lot happened with the opening of Yeshiva and Yeshiva College. First of all, as far as the yeshiva goes, for the first time it has real critics. Because for the first time that we know about in history, under one roof you have a yeshiva and a yeshiva college. It's like what I spoke about yesterday when I showed you this tremendous technological development. Imagine in one machine, if I don't know if that's the right word, or one, what word would you use? One instrument, one piece of furniture. Give me a technological word. You have a frigidaire and a oven that can heat on the highest temperature in one unit. All right, this is an unbelievable development, as we explained yesterday. It solves all the problems of how to run a kosher kitchen on Shabbos in a 5-star hotel. It's unbelievable. Now, here you have a yeshiva university under one roof. So, of course, it created a lot of opposition to the yeshiva. You get involved with one question after another. You need money. You have to give honorary doctorates. Who do you give an honorary doctorate to? Who do you want to? Look, until today, I can only tell you the following. I was in Mount Kisco. I have a Talmud who was there for 10 years. He took one of my dearest Talmidim ever, who studied me in BMT, studied me in Gruss, and he took the shteller against my advice. There's no Das Torah in my world. He had a choice of a shteller in Baltimore, a shteller in Mount Kisco. Do you all know where Mount Kisco is? Or am I talking to the deaf and dumb? Do you know, Sam, upstate New York, Favafin, very cold, much colder. Why is Mount Kisco on the map? Because Hasidim, what's the name of, it's not exactly Hasidim, it's an Ungarische Hasidische, the Nitra Hasidim, but they're not really Hasidim, it's Nitra was a community in Hungary. So they went to Mount Kisco, and they built in Mount Kisco. Why is Mount Kisco so important. Why is Mount Kisco so important? Because Mount Kisco, Herzog, the winery, it all began in Mount Kisco. Kedem Wines, that is a Nitra Chassid who became a multi-millionaire and changed a great deal of the image of the wine industry. So, you see, my Talmud went there, didn't go to Baltimore, he was there 10 years, and he experienced Yiddishkeit, it's out of New York, and I was once scholar in residence there, and I see this kehila, and they're davening, and they're singing, and I see women with tichels on, and I say to my Talmud, you've done a fabulous job here. He says, Rebbe, I don't even have a minion of Shomrei Shabbos. I say, what are you, playing games with me? They're singing, they're davening women tichels. He says, Rebbe, they're big Zionists, they've been to Israel, it's the atmosphere. Watch what will happen after Kiddush. And here I speak, I teach. I had an experience there, an old-time East European Jew who taco was a Shomer Shabbos, made a bracha on me. I felt like an apple, if you understand what I'm saying. But all right, I guess for Mount Kisco, a Jew comes in who knows a little something, it's Shechalak Mechachmato. And there we go, Alan, and if you know Mount Kisco, the shul is right near the train station. The railroad, by the way, that's shut down today. They had a big crash, a lot of people injured. So it's right near the train station. There is unbelievable parking on Shabbos because all week, thousands of cars parked there to jump on the trains to go to New York. Shabbos, no one works. So we walk out of the parking lot, we start walking home. Every car pulls out. The very people who davened are waving to us, Shabbat Shalom, Shabbat Shalom. It's like an unreal world. I said, Aaron, you're right. You don't have a minyan Shomrei Shabbos. Now, there's a lot of heavy money in Mount Kisco. So in this part of town, not Nitra. Nitra has Herzog and a few others, but it's a poor community. Here you have a lot of multimillionaires. So I see this Jew, and his wife writes for the New York Times, and intelligent people asking me questions, understanding me. You know, I'm reacting, and a Rebbe is an actor. Yes, I heard that from, I don't have time now, I heard that from the Rav, and it's absolutely true. And if you talk with any actor or actress, they react to the audience. A great actor can perform even when there are 10 people looking at him. That's a great actor. But some actors need 10,000 people to do their best. So I see, what a couple. So my Talmud tells me he's on the international board of Eish HaTorah. I say, wow, he must be a real Baal Tshuva. He says, no. And I couldn't believe my eyes. He says, you're going to see them pull out in a minute. Here's a guy in the international board of Eish HaTorah pulling out on Shabbos and waving to us Shabbat Shalom. I meet him at the Kotel. I invite him to daven at my minyan, Young Israel of the Kotel, world famous minyan, the greatest people daven there. We could solve Netanyahu's problems in one Friday afternoon if he ever showed up at the minyan. No, I can't daven with you. We have to daven with Eish HaTorah. Wow. No, do you honor a guy like this? Do you put him on the international board? You understand? This is Eish HaTorah in the year 2014. We're not talking ancient history. This is a delicate question. Yeshiva got attacked and the Sapphire scandal. Now, I don't know if that today would be a scandal, but in those years, it was viewed in a yeshiva that can never be a scandal. Who could ever think of a Rosh Yeshiva with an Eish HaTorah? Sikenish sign? Gentlemen, I'll give you a whole list of Rosh Yeshiva that I know. I'll tell you a story, but I can't do it when the microphone is here, of how I saved the very famous yeshiva. I have a schut that none of you can imagine. And the inner crew knows the schut I have. Save the yeshiva. Baruch Hashem. Mir Hashemayim Zikuni. It's not for now. Ask me to another time. So, see, that's one development. The other development, JTS now is not limited. It can go its own way. They don't have to make compromises. They don't have to get rid of Mordechai Kaplan. They don't have to teach more Talmud. They can fife on the world because you want the old-fashioned Orthodox. But back for Jews, they can barely speak in English. After a miracle, the kinder can read in English. Go to yeshiva and yeshiva college. You want to be part of America? Come to us. Now, there was another fallout, and we spoke about it last week, and it's an interesting, it's a topic that we can discuss and live and act upon. It's fascinating, this topic is now on the Israeli scene as well. We study in a traditional fashion. Chachmat Yisrael is much more scientific. It reflects in many different ways. I'll give it to you on the simplest level of all, because in the Mizrahi world, the so-called Mizrahi world, the world, if you see what's been written, what's going on with the intellectuals, the world is shaking over this topic. How do you study Tanakh? How do you study Avraham Avinu? Tell me, how do you relate to Avraham chasing Hagar away? No? How do you relate to Avraham Avinu being willing to sacrifice Kachet Bincha Yechitcha Shehafter Et Yitzchak Alei Eliola? To sacrifice his son. How do you relate to that? Interesting questions. How do you relate to Yitzchak and his machlokes with Rivka over who's the son to get the blessing? How do you relate to the fact that Yitzchak wanted Esav to get the blessing? How do you relate to Yaakov Avinu and the 12 tribes and his favoritism towards Yosef? No. Rabbi Rubin, you recognize these problems? All right. Excuse me? Listen, these are real problems. How do you write? Rabbi Riskin was put into Chayrim. You should know. Rabbi Riskin, when he came to Manchester to speak and to raise funds, this is years ago, they threw rocks at him in Manchester. Now these are, when all of a sudden, these are English Jews. They're more refined. They have savoir faire. They have derech eretz. They have sophistication. He had written articles in Jerusalem Post criticizing the Avot. You understand? And then he came back to London, where they heard about what went on in Manchester, and he raised more money in London than he ever raised before. I mean, this Rabbi Riskin, you have to know Rabbi Riskin, he was arrested, there was a demonstration here, with the government, with what we have to put up with our leaders. God have mercy. But I don't know, maybe, who knows, Masharim Mikan Lo Mishum, it could be when you become prime minister, America tells you they'll destroy Israel in 1 minute if you don't do this. I don't know, I'm a Lamed Zchut, maybe that's what Netanyahu faces. I hope I'm not right, but that's the only way I can understand the man. So, and at least try to understand him. So Riskin is demonstrating, and Riskin gets it. It's a true story. Riskin gets, I was at the demonstration, Yosef Begun was at the demonstration, Prison of Zion. Yosef Begun tried to pull me in front of the horses. I said, Yosef, I don't have time to get arrested. So you were there too, so you remember, Rabbi Rubin certifies I'm telling the truth. Riskin was arrested, and the police evidently didn't know who he was, and he's in jail overnight. Do you know how much money poured in? A famous Rosh Yeshiva came to me, Rabbarim, Efshikent and Gebn in an Eitzek, maybe you can give me an idea how I can get arrested like Rabbi Riskin. He said, I told him, it's not going to help if you get arrested. Rabbi Riskin is known all over the world. So when he is arrested and the Jewish Telegraphic Agency picks it up, millions pour in. If you get arrested, it's another black Jew with a long beard and a kapata. It's not going to help you. I said, first you got to build up a reputation, then you can get arrested. But giving back the cult hell here. By the way, you know what the demonstrations are over. Okay, so you see, the conservative movement is one thing, but how do you approach the Avot? How do you approach, are you allowed to look at them as human beings? Even the Ramban at times has a critical remark to make. Even Rav Hirsch occasionally. No, how do we educate? And this too, again, borders on classic learning, what I call Talmud Torah, and Chachmat Yisrael. And what's fascinating is both rabbis, Revel and Belkin, had PhDs in Chachmat Yisrael. Why they went into those fields? I think it was simply transfer of knowledge when you know Shas and Paiskim, so you can get involved. And these are fascinating topics. When you open up a Gemara, you're not going to be bothered by what the Karayim do, what the Tztukim do, what the Philonian Jews did. But from Chachmat Yisrael, it's very fascinating. What's their tradition? Where do they differ with us? I can give you one example where Chachmat Yisrael is very powerful in helping us explain what Torah is all about. It's very simple. What do we believe in? Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaalpeh. Eli, what do the Karayim believe in? Torah Shebichtav. You know what's fascinating? That even the Karayim ultimately have a Torah Shebaalpeh. They don't just have a Torah Shebichtav, because it's impossible to transmit a tradition without an oral commentary. So then, of course, you can say where the legitimate oral commentary, going back to Matan Torah, but the fact that they too have an oral commentary, even though they're Karayim, so you see, Moshe Emet v'Torato Emet. Now, these are the problems of Chachmat Yisrael. There are other problems as well, you know, establishing a correct text. I would say over the years, the places that got involved in Chochmat Yisrael, and certainly Yeshiva College is the first institution that under Torah auspices to have a graduate school that works with Chochmat Yisrael. Today you have it in Bar Ilan, you have it in Hebrew University, you have it in Tel Aviv University. JTS has always claimed that the Chochmat Yisrael is pure and not defiled by conservative theology, which has a certain amount of truth to it, a certain amount of truth. And getting involved with text, I'll tell you one little story. We had a classmate, Harris Gedalia. Harris Gedalia should live me well, Rabbi Gedalia. He was Yitzchak's classmate, if I'm not mistaken. Right or wrong? Harris Gedalia married Judy Bentheim. So Harris Gedalia had one advantage that Yitz and I didn't have. He didn't have to work for a living right away. So this is true. I remember he took off a year or two and he did what everyone dreamt about. He got smich in YU. He goes to London, I believe. He studied in Jewish College. Comes to Hebrew University. He studies Talmud with Professor Shraga Abramson, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. By the way, Professor Abramson's son-in-law is a Talmud of mine from this kollel. Who is Professor Abramson? When I went in Aliyah, I went to Reb David Lifshitz to take a Birchat Preda. Reb David told me, among many other things, I should look up Professor Abramson. He said, "You Talmud Chacham of Hak." They were childhood chavruta, and Professor Abramson was Bucky in all of Shas, unbelievable knowledge. I knew him. So I asked Rabbi Gedalia Harris, what was it like taking a class with Professor Abramson? I think he studied Chagigi with him, or Horiot, could be Horiot. So he says to me, at the end of the year, while we studied with the Rav, we knew the Sugyas. We knew the Machlokes Rishonim, Rambam, Raivin. With Professor Abramson, I knew endless variant readings, but I didn't know one Sugya. You see, it's a different approach. Why you, for whatever, I don't go into more detail now because it would take me into the latter period, but I would say what has come out of YU and what has come out of Bar Ilan, and to a certain degree the Hebrew University, it's not so much the variant readings. A lot of that already has been done by Yad Rav Herzog, by the Encyclopedia Talmudit, by the Gemaras they issued, but the comprehensive overlook, Rishonim, Machloiket, interaction with life. You take my classmate, Dr. Grach, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, his work on Yeinim is the gold letter in Chachmat Yisrael. It shows total mastery of Shas and Paiskim on the Sugya of Stam Yeinim, and it interplays with the social context, the historic context, the economic context. He has pictures of maps where the Jews lived in Franco Germany. And then he has maps where the vineyards are in Franco Germany. And when you place one map on top of the other map, you see that the Jews lived exactly where the vineyards were. This was their biggest business. Then you get involved already with the question, how do you send wine with goyim, transport wine? Maybe they'll stick their fingers into the barrel. How do you make a barrel that is foolproof? How can you be certain the goyim haven't touched the wine? How can you be certain it's not stam yenam? Who can step on the grapes? These Hashanahs we don't even have today, because today everything is mechanized. Jews are going to work stepping on grapes? You're going to do work like that? They hired goyim. It's like the state of Israel. They hired goyim. No, you hire goyim. They're stepping on grapes. Wine is coming out. At what point do you have to be chayshish? If goyim stam touch grapes, it doesn't make it stam yenim. But if juice is flowing all over the place and the goyim are dancing on it, stam yenim. These are real problems. And this takes us to Sunday Shia, Shat HaDachak, Hefzid Meruba. How do you paskin? Machlokes Rashi v'Rabbeinu Tam, like I showed you yesterday. Machlokes Reb Moshe and Rav Henkin. If we would paskin like Rav Henkin, we'd have Shilas Amam Zerid of over 500,000 people living in the state of Israel today. You understand? So this is the interconnection. And that's the graduate school, that's what Rabbi Rebel began. He brings in Rabbi Belkin, and no one is better than Rabbi Belkin at that moment in time for a beautiful synthesis between Talmud Torah and Chochmat Yisrael. Now, let me go to the seminary and let me take you into a different world. The seminary had a very powerful attraction as well. It could very well be, and I can't be certain about this because there's no way I can interview my cousin Rabbi Revel or my mentor Rabbi Belkin. Students were flocking to the seminary. I mentioned Rabbi Aaron of Mount Kisco before. His father was a year behind me. He was in, was he in your class, Rabbi Goldscheider? Goldscheider. That was your classmate. Zichrona, what was his first name? I don't remember. Zichrona Levracha. He went to the seminary. He was not the only. He's a Muslim. He had a conservative temple rabbi for many, till he died. He died young. He died a few years ago. I don't think he hit 70. And he was in the rabbinate in Long Island. And so many graduates of the yeshiva went to the seminary. So one reason was, and I don't want to elaborate, but we've said it many times, you can't believe how potent this reason is. I grew up with these people, I spoke with these people, I lived with these people, I faced the same challenges of these people. I know what I'm saying. In 1963, I spoke at a funeral, and one of the leading conservative rabbis in the world comes over to me. He was at the funeral because the kids belonged to his temple. And the grandfather, who I eulogized, was one of the founders of the first Orthodox shul in suburban Essex County, where I was the first rabbi. And he offers me a position. He says, I have a shtela for you. They're looking for a rabbi. They need someone like you who knows how to speak. $25,000. Here I was getting from YU as a Rosh Yeshiva, $4,000. $2,000 more went to my congregation to pay my $4,000 salary. So YU was paying four to Rosh Yeshiva, two to the Kehillah. The Kehillah paid me four, a total of $8,000 to my pocket. And here I'm offered $25,000. Wow. And I turned it down. And he called me a masochist. But all right, the future was there. We'll make a few compromises. So that's one pull of the seminary. Orthodoxy has no future. Who's interested? Who cares? And I told you, they sold the pool. What he said, the machitza will disappear in America. That's one level. Another level, the seminary always succeeded in attracting a few individuals who were shichmon lamala mikol ha'am, giants of Torah and giants of Chachmat Yisrael. In a later period, you all know the name of Shaul Lieberman. I mean, who Reb Shaul Lieberman was? I told you the story that the Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, should live and be well, took his class in the 60s to visit Reb Shaul Lieberman. I heard this from the kids in the class. And he said to them, you're going to meet a Jew who knows Kol HaTorah Kula, Munach Lefanav B'Kupsa. He said to them, you can ask Reb Shaul whatever you want. And these kids prepared, they come in. And you know, Reb Shaul Lieberman, he looked Irish. I don't know how many of you ever saw Reb Shaul Lieberman. He looked Irish, clean shaven, didn't look Jewish. Looked Irish. And the Reb Shaul Lieberman is sitting there, a sense of humor. And they started asking him, and they were blown away. They never saw anything like it. Kol HaTorah Kula Munach Lefanav. Like, it's, he just finished it a minute ago. What have you asked him? It's, he was right there. And in addition, his scientific approach, what he was able to do with Greek, Latin words, right? The Yishna, there's a critique against him that his commentary on the Tosefta is more yeshivist than it is scholarly. But the people who make that critique are Amayaretz, you understand. You got to know where they're coming from. He was a giant. Professor Louis Ginsberg was the Shaul Lieberman of his generation. And I want to spend some time describing him because his story is second to none. It's worthy of a movie. Okay, now, how do I happen to know so much about Professor Louis Ginsberg? Louis Ginsberg. Very simple. In the very early years of BMT, when we had no competition, we were the first ones. When I was introduced at RCA, so I saw on their sheet describing the speakers, they described me as, I don't know, playing a big role. I would use the word exporting Torah to the Anglo world. And I tell everyone seriously and jokingly, I had one advantage that no one else had. I know a little bit Shas and Paiskim. Knew many others know Shas and Paiskim, but I also knew a lot of baseball. And many others knew baseball, but they didn't know Shas and Paiskim. So, all right, we did what we did. One of our students was David Galinkin. In those days, you came to BMT either a junior in college or after college. They were much older. I made shidduchim, actually, with BMT boys and the Machon Gold girls and Michalá girls. So, David Galinkin was the son of a conservative rabbi and the grandson of an Av Beis Din in Boston, a Yudapeyah Shidduch. David was a fine young man. He should live and be well. We're still in contact until today. And he goes on to become very big in the seminary. He heads up their division here in Shechtas. He's the dean. He's had some bitter machloiket that he lost. I feel bad for him. If you follow the news and the papers, there was a tremendous battle here over homosexuals, what drove me crazy yesterday. And he lost the battle. For years, he would not allow homosexuals to be ordained here. So some other people resigned. But he evidently has, you know, no place to go at his age. So he remains there. Anim alamei d'alav zchut. He's suffering. Now, David Galinkin worked with the papers, the archives of Louis Ginsberg. And he put out a fabulous volume in 1996, The Responsa of Professor Louis Ginsberg. And I was given a gift, this volume, actually was given this gift in Harrisburg by people who helped pay for the volume, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And I went through the entire volume, and the truth that I have to tell you, there was not one response that Professor Ginsberg gave that I wouldn't agree with. It was mamish. It's hard to understand why you call him conservative on the halachic level. But what's very fascinating is a beautiful introduction where he summarizes the biographical material on Professor Ginsberg. Now, Louis Ginsberg had a son, Eli Ginsberg, who wrote a famous biography of his father, Keeper of the Law. In addition, they found some autobiographical material. It's interesting. Louis Ginsberg, Rabbi Luchstein, Rabbi Young at the end of his life, Rabbi Goldstein, all these important people dreamt of putting out autobiographies, but they never got around to it. But they scribbled, their pages that survive, And they're very fascinating, because it's first-person recollection of their youth, what they saw, what they went through.
It's very, serious.
I know, but their mistakes, I know. Afterwards, they do a biography and they correct the mistakes, because they say he was old, he didn't have all his facts right. I've seen that many times. All right, thank God I wrote the... I wrote my shtiyot while my mind was good. No one has yet to find a mistake in Washington. And even in my work on the Rav, then everyone looked at it with terribly critical eyes. And the only one who challenged one sentence is Rabban Soloveitchik. And it's a fieldless choice. I rewrote it. If I'll ever be zeichet to have someone reprint the not reissued the volume, but put out a new edition, that sentence I rewrote. But that's a different story. All right, let's talk about Louis Ginsberg, and you'll understand why he was such an attraction for a yeshiva boy. His years, 1873-1953. Louis or Levi Ginsberg. You all know him, first of all, he published on the Yerushalmi, he published on the Ga'inim. His most famous work is Legends of the Jews. Legends of the Jews go back to his doctorate. And we'll mention it in context, but he wrote on Midrashim preserved in the writings of the Church Fathers. Now, you see, that itself is a fascinating topic. When you learn Midrash Rabbah, when you learn Tanhuma, when you learn Medrash HaGadol, do you give a hoot what the Goyim know about these Medrashim? You know, it doesn't enter into your ballpark. What do I care? What Goyim? But the original Church Fathers came from Jews. Didn't Rabbi Riskin create a world scandal when he called Jesus? No, you tell me. How did he refer to Jesus a few years ago? Rabbi Jesus. And everyone is going crazy. All right, Rabbi Riskin, I think, enjoys throwing out a little dynamite and seeing the reaction. But right now, what's going on with the in his shul. He allowed the women to read Megillat Rut for men. It went into Jewish press last week, and everyone. I never yet heard that Megillat Rut is like Megillat Esther. That there's such a chovah that you have to read it. It seems the men didn't know how to read it. The women know how to read it. You can be yotzei to Megillat Rut by davening it up. You don't have to read it with truf and everything. But the women read for the men. This was what I read in Jewish press. I don't know, Jewish press doesn't lie. Am I correct? It has to be factual. So Rabbi Riskin calls him Rabbi Jesus. Now, but whatever. I've been saying that the problem is that you don't want to give Jesus credit. It was the Tzaddik Yisrael Olam. Chronologically. Say that I'm not quibbling, but considering that I try my best not to refer to a conservative or reform or a spiritual leader as rabbi, Allah had come of a come, I'm not going to call Jesus rabbi. All right. Anyway, so he went into the Church Fathers and their knowledge of Midrashim, you see? And that's what got him involved with Legends of the Bible. And if you're familiar with Legends of the Bible, you see his voluminous footnotes with his comparisons to the Midrash that we have, to the Church Fathers, to the differences, to the variant readings. You can see this, and they say he has hundreds of thousands of footnotes in the multi-volume Legends of the Jews, and all this he carried in his head. It's not today we take notes. We have a computer. I mean, I'll talk about it next week, but I got a correspondence from a big Talmud Chacham that something I said in the Tanya in my talk, I was mechaven to Rav David Kalina. And he alludes to it, but he doesn't give me the source. So Sholem helped me He was able to come up with the sources. It's exactly what I needed. What you found was exactly what I needed. And I see that I, Baruch Hashem, I was mechavin in a hashkafic fashion to Rav David Kalin. It wasn't a shayla lahalach in what we talk about Sunday, but hashkafa, I was mechavin, Baruch Hashem, the same sources I quote, Rav David Kalin quotes. So I, if I'm mechavin to Rav David, I have to give a kiddush, but I don't know, I have to jump for joy, dance, kazatska. All right, Baruch Hashem. So, you did it. Here, he found the sources. I find the sources. We're little guys. Rabbi Lichtenstein's no shas by heart. But still, even Rabbi Lichtenstein has to go to a computer. All right? He was like Rabbi Lahavdil. You're talking about Rabbi Avadji Yosef. Rabbi Avadji Yosef once had a contest vis-a-vis the computer, and they say Rabbi Avadji beat the computer. So you're talking here, he carried all this in his head. Now, he was born, here are the beautiful stories. He was born into a very from home, a Litvisha home. His mother was a great-great-granddaughter of Rab Avraham, the brother of the Gra. He was brought up, everything. Everything he did was based upon the Gra. The Gra had blue eyes, and they had a tradition that only someone with blue eyes in his family would be as learned as the Gra. And little Levi Ginsberg had blue eyes. He tells the story in his autobiography when he was 4 years old. And by the way, the story, if you know this, something with Reb Chaim that's slightly similar. 4 years old, his mother gave him an apple. No, a kid 4 years old, he didn't make a bracha. He shoved the apple in his mouth. And his mother said to him, Levi, you have to make a bracha. You have to make a bracha. And she says to him, the Gaon would have made a bracha. And this chutzpah, the kid, says to his mother, how do you know the Gaon would have made a bracha? And she says to him, even when the Gaon nursed, he made a bracha. Boy, oh boy, that is powerful. And Levi Ginsberg writes, he was brought up, the Gaon did this, the Gaon did that. The Gaon was the biggest figure in his life. And in his writings, he writes about the Gaon. He calls him Zikni Dodi. You follow? My elder uncle, my great uncle. When you have yichus like that, you boast. Every once in a while, you know, I throw out my cousin, Rabbi Dov Revel. All right. It's an amazing thing to have yichus like that. In my case, to find it out 48 years after I did my doctorate in Rabbi Revel is even more amazing. But how I found it out. But Baruch Hashem. Now, he learned in Tells and in Slabatka. And he was a real yeshiva boy, a real musanik, a real matmid. Story is told, and this is one of the most, perhaps the most famous story about the young Levi Ginsberg, that when he was learning in Slabatka, Kovna, the musa movement was very big there. And the Prushim, they were called, they would separate from the mainstream of life, Prushim, and particularly the 40 days for Shchodesh Elul till after Yom Kippur, those were the days of war against the Yetzirah. Shmuel, we don't feel that today. You know, it was Chodesh Elul, a little shofar, the David Hashem Ori. All right, we learn a little bit Musa, but they describe when Elul came in Eastern Europe, the fish would shake in the sea. Chodesh Elul. No, were you ever there at a Musa retreat? What did they do? I saw this with my own eyes in Lakewood. Taina Dibur. From Rosh Chodesh Elul on, until Motzoi Yom Kippur, you did not speak. The only time you spoke was in learning. You're learning with the Chavruta, you have to talk. You can't just sit there and be a dummy. Outside of that, they didn't speak. That chas v'chalila, they shouldn't speak any lashon hara. This was called the time of year. By the way, the Sfadim do it in full today. They have time of yot dibur, where they don't speak anything for a day, just davening, learning. While he's in this time of dibur, his mother travels to visit him in Slabodka. And this kid refuses to speak to his mother. He writes her a note. Ich bin in a ta'anit dibur. I'm in a ta'anit dibur today. Ich kann nicht reden. I can't speak. A relative got so upset, rebuked him, and he tells the relative, which comes first? Avodat Hashem? Or kibud av v'yem. Et shabbosotai tishmuru. Parents tell you lechalel Shabbat. Don't listen to them. To talk in a tiny dibur. This was the kid. Now, you should know that this frumkeit remained with him all his life. Many times on a subconscious level, and at times, particularly in his later years, he expressed it publicly. What a mistake I made in leaving the Litvische Torah world. Tell me, do you hear an echo here? Can anyone fill me in on what Rekefet has said over the years about Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg? Anyone fill me in, Josh? And Josh? Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, he used to say, here was a man, professor, German, world-class scholar, genius. You can't be a good Jew unless you first studied in Slabodka hotels. Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov could never leave. Could never leave his youth.
That was a tragedy.
Yitzchak, please try to understand these people.
Rebel couldn't leave
Sapphire. No, please. Rebel, please, Rebel.
Why did he move the yeshiva to Israel?
Reb Chaim Oz said to you, what is he, your personal friend, your buddy? Who we talk?
Not to move.
Brown writes about it, by the way. Yitzchak, I would advise you to go study with a guy named Aaron Rakefet for 40 years. And you'll know all the facts, but the hatred will be taken out of you. 14 years is good, good, good. We're getting there. Gentlemen, what Yitzchak is saying, by the way, is true, but don't say it negatively. Unlike the Rav. See, the Rav, who had, he grew up in Chaslovich, he went to Cheder, he saw Hasidic Warsaw, but he was perfectly happy in Maimonides. It's an amazing. He was totally at home in Yeshiva University. You never heard the Rav say, yeah, you guys will amount to nothing. What the heck is this? You got to go back to Brisk. You got to go back to Volozhin. You never, ever heard the Rav say, Lehefech, the Rav told lies in public. I have it. Rakefet writes it. Rakefet didn't make it up. Rakefet wouldn't say it. I'm quoting the Rav. My Talmidim in Yeshiva University, even if they were in Volozhin, they would be among the top Talmidim. And you know something? The older I get, the Rav is right. Take a look at why you turned out. No, we have anything to be ashamed of? Take a look at the Sherman Discola. The level. Take a look at Alon Shvut. Take a look at Rabbi Lichtenstein. We have anything to be ashamed of? But Louis Ginsberg was exactly like Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov on that level. Yes, yes, Moshe.
How could Louis Ginsberg preach that to his community who clearly weren't going to follow that? How can you be a leader of the community? He wasn't all the
guys around. Moshe, you have one mistake. Look, you saw me here this morning. I got here 6:15. I went into my office, I ate, I read, I learned. What I've done today, I started learning already at 4:30. I answered all types of questions. I'm going to go home, I'm going to disappear, no one is going to see me. Leader Shmita, the only thing that Rakefet can do is Baruch Hashem teach Torah Hashem to Mima. Lahavdil. Louis Ginsberg was in a classroom, he was a professor. Have you read Washington or not? Moshe, you cannot breathe air without studying Washington. The guy who wrote Washington has a story in there. It's worth buying the book just for that story. Forget about the pictures. The pictures are worth more than the book. You should go back and even Rakefet gets nothing. I'll show you my receipt for taxes, what I got for last year. It is laughable. It is beyond words. But okay, that's Geffen. Rakefet resigns. I'm not a money fighter. Thank God I'm alive. I have enough for bread and water. I have a story there. Rabbi Radin says to us, Rabbi Radin, the rabbi of Inwood, the conservative temple, Kentavi Shiv, the Rav, total Baal Tshuva, graduate of the seminary, I think I have down there 28, 29. It's all, everything checked out, everything correct, scholarly. And Rabbi Radin says, gentlemen, you want to know the difference between the Rav and Rabbi and Professor Liebman? I studied with both of them as you all began. What's the difference? And he told us a number of things. But one thought I'll never forget. The Rav never finishes shiur on time, always goes late. Wherever you see me, surrounded by students. I used to walk the Rav to the subway. I wasn't the only one. There were 10 of us around him, bothering him with questions and learning in Shinas Lahalacha, questions in politics. I remember talking to him about Adlai Stevenson. I'll never forget it. Professor Liebman comes late to class, leaves early, runs back to his research in his room. Got it? You're looking at Louis Ginsberg, leader, Shmita. He hid in his room. That was the greatness of the seminary. You taught 4 hours a week. You got paid a decent salary. All you had to do was scholarship. Okay? I know people published Revel, Silver, Rakefet, Tuvan, the Raptor, the Washington. This guy worked so hard you could never catch him. He had to make a living. Taught Machon Gold, Michlala, DMT, Gross. My daughter just asked me, how did you do so much in your life? I said, honey, I'm a workaholic. How did I do so much? What can I do? Learning all the time. Shas. That's it. I spoke too much about that dummy Rakefet. But you're making a mistake. You think he was in his office, but in his memoirs, in his heart. I'll give you a source soon. You'll understand. I'm going to go into the other side. I'm going to go into his love life, and there's one fascinating letter that survives. Yeah.
There had been 10 students who wanted to walk Shaul Lieberman to the subway. Would you have been interested in talking to him and trying to...
Look, I can tell you, Shaul Liebman was a very nice person. As a human being, at Gota Shmeichel, he liked to have a schnapps. He was a very nice person. But you would be afraid of bothering him. You're taking time away from his research, from his writing. And remember, the kids at the seminary wasn't the relationship of a Talmud Rebbe. It's a different relationship. Here was a professor and students. It's a different relationship.
You didn't
want to
surround Kaplan, right?
You got to remember, Kaplan and Heschel were actors, were performers. Lieberman looked down upon Heschel as an Amorid steel writer. Heschel, when all of a sudden that was the Shtickel Chassidic Rebbe, was the Kapishnitz Rebbe's son, the Kapishnitz Rebbe's brother. So there, you seek out a Rebbe, you understand, look at Breslov today, look at Lubavitch, the video of the Rebbe at 6:24, I want to say 7, not Shabbos, but I hope not Shabbos, with the Messianics, who knows what can be. But Lubavitch, I don't want to say a bad word about Lubavitch, they're fabulous, but they do great work, but that's a Rebbe. Kaplan, charismatic. He was a leader. Moshe Kaplan was a leader. When Ani Rothkopf gave him a lift in his car to take him home because he lived around the corner from BMT when we met in the House of Mourning and I was going to BMT. It was a conservative rabbi sitting shiva for his wife, Rabbi Teddy Friedman, Zeichet Tzadeh. One of them was a good guy, but Nebuch, a Reitz graduate who winds up, a Reitz student, who winds up writing one of the three signatures on the tshuva being Mata writing on Shabbos. So I give him a lift. He gets out of the car and he speaks to me and he shows me his fringes. He's trying to convert me to Judaism as a civilization. Understand? He was a leader, but not Ginsburg. Not Ginsburg.
Maybe they wanted the religious perspective too. They didn't want Ginsburg's religion.
Look, halacha lemaisa, the Rav was the Rav, and we can't take away that there was a certain fire that lit up the souls of his students. You heard the Rav give a drush or a yardside drush, or you heard the Rav speak divrei akada, you heard the Rav speak divrei musa. Ginsburg did not talk like that. There was a difference. There were all of a sudden done with all the credence to what Rabbi Rubin said, critique of the Rav and his personality. Nevertheless, the Rav was the Rav. There was that interconnection, and it only grew stronger over the years as he became more human and mellowed, unfortunately, due to the vicissitudes of life, the maelstrom of life, and the students who sought him out, Soloveitchik. I still shiver and shake when I think that a little kid like Ani Rothkopf could get on a 36 bus ride for 20 minutes, get off at Amsterdam Avenue, walk from 180th to 185th, open up the door to room 102, and sit down next to Reb Chaim's grandson. Wow. Unbelievable. Now, yes.
Why
he was different, this we can all have our own theories. My own thinking is very simple, that he had a very strong mother, Rebbetzin Pesha. And Rebbetzin Pesha came from a much more open outlook than Reb Moshe. If you study Shulamit Meiselman's The Soloveitchik Heritage, you can see that there was plenty of tension between them on a certain level, at least at the start of their marriage. And Rebbetzin Pesha had a big impact on the Rav. And the Rav was convinced that was will never be again. We have the Rav on tape. It's an unbelievable tape in Moriah, where the Rav is ripping and says, can he sign this other Chassidish Vesgeven in Europe? So can he sign in America? Ich hab gekannt Chassid, ich hab gesehen. Was ich gesehen in Warsaw, was ich gesehen in Chaslavich, das wird nicht sein da, will not be. And a guy from the audience, a Belgian diamond dealer from a Chassidish home, yells out at the Rav, Rabbi, mach der Teuer, so can sein, blah, blah. And the Rav shoots back at him, I'll bring you a proof, ich bring in an ayah that you're absolutely wrong. Avu lernt bei Yisroel, er lernt bei mir. Er geht nicht zur Chassidische Yeshiva. And the Rabbi, do you understand me? I got to say it in Deutsch language. Oh, God. And the Rabbi jumps in the sky and he says, I'll prove to you you're wrong. Where does your son study? He studies with me in YU. He doesn't go to Chassidische Yeshiva. The Rabbi was convinced. Is the Rabbi right or wrong? You can take either point of view today. That Hasidus conquered America? Absolutely. Is this the same Hasidus, the European Hasidus? I doubt it. But this is a problem we all have today, that we're all engulfed by the Western world, by money, pleasure, sex. It's sickening. B'nai Teira. Whoever heard of so many scandals? It's beyond words. Beyond words. Rakefet says a good vart. Only in South Africa, I don't know of any scandals today. You know why? Because 90% of South African Orthodox Jews, and there are tremendous amounts percentage-wise, 90% are Balei Tshuva. Balei Tshuva take it seriously. We today are born, raised, everyone shame with Shabbos, glad kosher, blah, blah, blah. We never made a commitment in our lives. The youth that comes in Aliyah from America, this is the finest Torah youth in the world. They believe. and they don't cut out of their Torah, Lech Lecha Mayatzcha. It's all there. Let me get back here. Now, with this type of background, later in life, he decides he wants to go to college, wants to go to university. He goes to Frankfurt. Within 2 years, he completes elementary school, meaning equivalency, high school, ready for university, goes on to write about the church fathers, a genius of geniuses. Now, his father, Reb Yitzchak Ginsburg, was a Talmud of Reb Yisrael Salanter. And he was a businessman, very successful. He did not come from a poor house. But everything surrounding Professor Ginsburg in his youth was unbelievable mesirat nefesh for Yiddishkeit. He tells in his personal memoir fabulous stories. When his father took him to Tel's Yeshiva in 1884, they were living in Neustadt. From Neustadt, by the way, Neustadt later, Rav Yaakov Moshe HaKohen, Lesson the Mashkich of YU, my Rebbe in Musa, later was the Neustadt Rav. When they go from Neustadt to Tel's, it was a journey of 6 days. My dear students, they got off the horse and buggy. Every day and every evening, his father was makpid to daven in a minyan. A journey that could have been done in 3 days took 6 days because his father could not miss a minyan. They come to one community and they go into the inn, the Jewish inn. There are 9 people for Mincha Maariv. His father asks the owner of the inn, there's no other Jew in this town? And the owner says, yeah, there's another inn owned by a Jew, but we hate each other with a passion. We haven't spoken to each other in 10 years. His father, Reb Yitzchak Ginsburg, insisted he go and make friends, bring him in, they should have a minyan. Tells another story. They come to a community in Plunga, the middle of the night. They get off, they daven, they're finished, need a place to stay. Come to the rabbi's house, and they see a light on. His father knocks on the door. I'm describing what Professor Ginsburg wrote. Father knocks, knocks. Finally, the rabbi is learning. He has to wake up his wife. The wife has to wake up the maid. The maid has to get dressed. She opens the door. They walk in. They're classmates. The Rav of the Kehila and Levi learn together in Tells. The kid is star, and Levi's father learned together in Tells. Or Slabatka. The little Levi kid is starving. He hasn't eaten since lunch. His father starts talking and learning, and they're in a Rambam. They forget about food. Thank God the woman brings over food. The Rebbetzin, and the kid has something to eat. His father never eats. So next thing you know, it's morning. Morning, the father can't eat. He hasn't davened yet. And they first had to go daven, and the kid describes his father's frumkeit, something very, very special. Now, this is the way he was raised. He always remained an observant Jew. In thinking, there were periods in his life where he was very distant from Torah, particularly in Bikorat HaMikra. In his youth, he accepted Bible criticism. Later in life, he regretted that he had become so extreme in accepting Bible criticism. But there is no question that for a large period of his life, he was orthoprax. But in certain areas, he was certainly not orthodox. Now, this reflects in a very interesting sidelight to his life that anyone who lived in America in the first half of the 20th century was very well aware of. Here is Louis Ginsberg. Ran away from Europe. Came to America invited by Hebrew Union College. Hebrew Union College, after he arrives, tells him, we can't hire you. Whatever the reason is, we can only guess. Interestingly enough, many scholars say that they could not hire him because he believed in biblical criticism, and the founder of Hebrew Union College, the big Reformed rabbi, Isaac Meir Wise, did not believe in biblical criticism. And for that reason, he refused to hire Louis Ginsberg. Louis Ginsberg now meets Parnassa, came to America with very little money, came to America not knowing a word of English, but a genius is a genius. Within 3 years, he's hired by the Funken Wagner Jewish Encyclopedia to be the editor of the rabbinic section. He puts out 300 articles in perfect English. Without Louis Ginsberg, the Jewish Encyclopedia, which is so famous of 100 plus years ago, would have never been as successful. The seminary now is organized. It's going its own way. They hear about Louis Ginsberg, and they bring him to the seminary. Ah, my dear students, Virginia Slims is smoking in public. There is a very prominent rabbi in Baltimore, Rabbi Benjamin Zold. Rabbi Benjamin Zold is somewhere between Orthodox in his personal life, but a synagogue that has innovation and some reforms. You would call it today, perhaps, conservative or right-wing conservative. Benjamin Zold has a very bright daughter, Henrietta. And Henrietta wants to study Torah. There's no Stern College yet. Look what's going on downstairs as we teach here. Hundreds of magnificent young ladies are coming to register and arrange their courses for Stern College. Do you realize what a thank you they owe to a name they never even heard of? Rabbi Dr. Shmuel Belkin, Samuel Belkin. It's unbelievable. YU does not know how to honor its predecessors, founders, guiders, etc. Okay. Henrietta's old, there's no place to go. She's not going to take it lying down. Susan B. Anthony already has stated in public, trust in God and she will save you. Underline the she. She wants to be like Virginia Slims. She petitions the seminary to accept her as a student. The seminary's in a quandary. It's not the year 2014, it's the year 19-something. So they accept her as a student on condition she understands she cannot study for the rabbinate. She can attend the classes. And she attends, among others, Professor Ginsberg's class. Here is this brilliant lecturer. Handsome man. Here is this young lady. Vivacious. Brilliant, enchanting. She has a crush on her teacher. Just think for a minute, had Professor Ginsberg married Henrietta Zoll? Can I transform you and take you back to Berlin, 1920s? Just think for a minute, had the Rav met in Berlin, Nechama Leibovich? Okay, just think. Yeah, you know what the anecdote has it, and I can't verify whether it's true or not, but Rebbe was once asked, knew the Lubavitcher Rebbe in Berlin, knew Reb Chaim Heller, Rebbe Hillel Yaakov Weinberg, Rebbe Avraham Yeshua Heschel. Did he know Professor Nechama Leibovitch. And he's reported to have answered that he once walked into the library and there was this woman sitting there covered up by books in front of her that she was working with. Couldn't see her, but he was told that that lady is a Litvisha Ga'init who is in Germany today studying at the U of Berlin. Could you imagine had the Rav and Nechama gotten together? I have to tell you, whenever I spent Shabbos at Machon Gold, Nechama Leibovitch, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha, would come to be with us, and she would spend the whole Shabbos sitting next to me. We're eating, I could barely eat, bothering me. What did the Rav say this? What did the Rav say that? What did you hear from the Rav? She was so hungry for Torah from the Rav. Now, this relationship, and later, what can we do? Love is blind, love can't be predicted. Levi Ginsberg goes to Europe one summer, comes back with a second cousin, a real good looker, they say, happily married, and they live happily ever after. And Henry Edderzold, due to this rejection, goes on to become Henry Edderzold. She never marries, never gives a man the right time of day, and builds Hadassah Hospital, builds, I understand, Aliyah, Youth Aliyah, etc., etc. We worship her memory, Henrietta Zold. Just think what would have happened had she become Rebbetzin Ginsberg. Is it worth it? Would we have been better off? Nechama Leibovitch said, that's quoted in the books about her, that she would give away all that she achieved if she could only have been a mother. Say, takes us back to yesterday's shia, tav lemeitiv tumei lemeitiv amal. What I answered you was correct. You're talking on a different chazaka. That's where the Rambam, like, if it were the Goyim, but the Rav held this was ontological, and the Rav was right. And I don't say that as a Talmud. I say that as a person that has experienced not only my own life, but the life of thousands of students. Tav lemeitiv tumei. I'm quoting the Nechama Leibovitch. It's an unbelievable quote. It's right there in the books about her. Yeah, I heard it from her. I heard it from her myself. She used to confide in me and tell me, the world makes a mistake. You know, she married her blind uncle. And she says, I didn't marry him out of pity. He became blind, but he had problems. He was older. I didn't marry him out of pity. I married him out of love. The truth is, when you read the biographies on Nechama, he was the only person who understood her. Her parents used to yell at her, why are you studying so much? You don't care about the clothes you wear. You're not feminine enough. Who will want to marry you? And he supported her in her quest to study, to conquer. And it's a very delicate question. What do you do with a girl? It's your daughter who doesn't comb her hair properly, but knows Vitsa Optaichin, a Rambam, and a Raivit properly. It's a very delicate question. What have we done? It's a different world today. We can't put the women. The Chafetz Chaim already says it. Don't quote Rakefet. Quote the Likutei Halakha of the Chafetz Chaim. What are you going to do? Put the woman back into the kitchen? Don't leave the kitchen? That's it. A delicate question. Yes, yes, Danny.
The Talmud, Rosh Shapiro, thinks that Sir Deish, it seems like in the book, the Sir Deish, part of his struggle was because he never married.
He never remarried. He never remarried.
Do you think the same thing happened with Louis Yunker, that he never could connect?
He could have connected with Henry Yazol, but there has to be the attraction, the magic pull. She was open-minded. She was magnificent.
But because that he married someone European that didn't have education, you think that...
He married, listen, on safe ground. First of all, they say she was a very good-looking woman. She was younger, did you understand? There has to be that attraction, that magic, that pull. And he had a happy marriage. Everyone says she worshipped the ground he walked on. She was a fabulous wife and a seder. But, you know, you're getting involved in an area late in the late dying. You understand? There's no real seichel here. The first marriage, Charlie said, I misinterpreted the Gemara, passionate by memory. But the first marriage is basically magic. Ben Ploni, Labat Ploni, and you have to work it out. The second marriage already is Lefimasav. It would have seemed to me Kreshik Kriya Jamsef is harder on the first marriage, if the Gemara says on the second one. All right, anyway, there's no answer. I can't give a black and white answer. It's a theory. You're dealing here with human beings. You're dealing here with human emotion. You're dealing here with the secret of existence. You understand? I see my grandchildren bring home girls. Each one has different values, what they're looking for. One grandson always told me he doesn't want to marry a girl who is a teacher, a social worker, needs someone different, someone special. And he taka, to him brings his beauty, to quote him. And I see it. I have another Talmud, David, let me not mention his last name. David's been married twice. The first one was a student of mine, Ive, and became a woman's libba, Shem Yirachem. Now he's married to a Medeva. Very nice second marriage. And David says, to me, brains are beauty. That's what I'm looking for. I don't care about anything else, just brains. And taka, he just got brains, but the first one was too brainy for him. The second one is brainy, but she, with a feminist instinct. She said certain things to me that I saw she hit the nail on the head. Yes, Ellie?
I can't verify the exact source, but the quote, Henry Hazel also saying, I would change everything for one child of my own.
Okay, so that's Nechama Leva, which is exactly word by word. Now, what's fascinating about the relationship between Professor Ginsburg and his student, Henrietta, is he wrote her one letter is so important, where he reveals his soul to her. And in that letter, he tells her how bad he feels. This was right after his father died, that he disappointed his father and left the world of Torah. That I did not become a Gaon as he wished, but I became a scholar. And I know my poor father did not die peacefully on account of my becoming a scholar instead of a Gaon, and on account of my bachelorship. And I can assure you that I do not regret that I did not become a Polish Gaon. I only mention these facts to you to show you how much our individual happiness has to do with our relationship to Judaism. And nevertheless, in later life, he reveals to his son, Eli, who he's particularly close to, that he has a lot of second doubts if he took the right path. Now, in this biography, they describe Professor Ginsburg davening at the seminary. And on Yom Kippur, on the Ela, he was the Shliach Tzibur. And the description of his tears, his Elichkeit, his giving them a feeling of what it was like growing up in the shtetl in Eastern Europe was overwhelming. And here I have to say, Louis Finkelstein, who in his own personal life was totally observant, he was the son of Reb Shimon Finkelstein, a Ravin in Brooklyn, in Bensonhurst, I believe, a Yudapeyish Rav, a member of the Agudas HaRabbanim, Louis Finkelstein was an American product, a product of the seminary, a good scholar, a good Talmud Chacham, not a Gaon, but he had reverence for Professor Ginsburg, and later in life, worshipped the ground that Professor Liebman walked on. It was said about Louis Finkelstein, he believed in God, but he worshipped Professor Shaul Lieberman. You can take it 20 years earlier and say exactly the same thing. And Finkelstein was responsible for these people at the seminary. He glorified them, he dignified them, he enhanced their position, but these were attractions. These were pulls. Now, let me end off with one additional chapter in Louis Ginsburg's life. That he remained observant, everyone knows. There are anecdotes that he used electricity Shabbos. The truth is, there's Eidut Nemana. He didn't use electricity. He lived on the, I believe it was the west side. There was a doorman. There were goyim working in the building. And if they ever needed lights turned on or off or whatever the situation was or the elevator, they used the Gentile. And these are Maisim B'chol Yom. I have to tell you Friday night what happened to me. Mentioned this to Frank because I don't know if they understood. I mean, I take for granted if I throw out a source, people understand me. Friday night, I get back from the Kotel, and remember, we davened the L'chun Aranana at the plug 6:04. So I get back, it's broad daylight yet, it's a 40-minute walk, I'm back, and the lady who has to turn on the elevator, the Shabbos elevator, is only a great-granddaughter, Reb Chaim Yosef Sonnenfeld, and she's always late. She's always late. It's before Shkia, but it should have been turned on 40 minutes before, 30 minutes, Yerushalayim. So she arrives when I arrive. So I told her to turn on the elevator. But she didn't follow me. She said, no, I'll take you up. I said, all right, take me up. That's a tshuva of the Rashba. I spoke with the Rav. It's brought down by the Ramah. That there's no concept of Amir Eli Yisrael. So that's what I told them. Yeah, right. I spoke with the Rav about this in detail. And there's Amir Eli Akim is a concept by an Akim. By a Jew, if he can do the malacha, I can be nana. For him, this is a tshuva to Rashba. For him, it's not yet Shabbos. So she can take me up. I can go up in the elevator with her. So, but my talmidim who accompanied me, Steve, says, I don't want to see it. You know, like, you know what I mean? So you explain to Frame, I got to tell Steve that was the Rashba I was referring to, that nothing wrong. So the same thing with Louis Ginsburg, there already is more questionable. A guy, but the nog is, I don't have to tell you, on the Upper West Side, on the Upper East Side, the Rav already paskin lekula. I know that halacha lemaisa, that if it involves oneg Shabbos, and everything we do on Shabbos is oneg Shabbos, so you can tell a guy and he can do what you want.
Certainly,
the elevator man, he knows you. Louis Ginsburg has lived there from time immemorial, etc., etc. Okay. One incident, so on that level, this is not Mordechai Kaplan. It's not like Mordechai Kaplan, who Judaism is a civilization, didn't carry on Shabbos. My father didn't carry. He wore handkerchiefs around his neck. And then one day there was a heavy rain, and Mordechai Kaplan is walking on the Upper West Side on Amsterdam Avenue, I think it was, with an umbrella. So they say to him, Rabbi Kaplan, Professor Kaplan, how are you walking with an umbrella? You don't carry Shabbos. So he says, for civilization, you don't get sick. Now, I don't know if that really happened or it's an anecdote, but that's Kaplan. You wouldn't hear an anecdote like that about Professor Louis Ginsburg. In 1945, the world shook for many reasons. One of the reasons, on a small level, was Mordechai Kaplan came out with his famous Siddur. When that Siddur came out in abridged version, he abolished this, he abolished that. So the Agudas HaRabbanim held a public meeting in a hotel in New York, and with all the photographers there, was on the front page of the Daily News the next day. They took his Siddur and threw it into a pan that had a fire in it. They burned the Siddur and put Mordechai Kaplan into Cheirim. I have to say, to the covered of Louis Ginsburg, and I'll give you the other names, Professor Shaul Lieberman and Professor Alexander Marx. Alexander Marx, a name you should know. He was the son-in-law of Reb David Zvi Hoffman. He was the librarian and taught at the seminary. I believe he was librarian. He put out the book Marx on Margolis, the famous one-volume history text, which basically has never been equaled. So much material in it. And basically a from book. There's nothing in there which is apikrasis. I believe that Yeshayahu, they do accept the Dutro Yeshayahu theory, but that was in the vogue at the time. Maybe you can check me out. Or it could be they just mention it. But these three individuals came out against Mordechai Kaplan in public. while they didn't agree with the barbaric act of the Agudat HaRabbanim, and again, I have to tell you, you got to have seichel. You're not going to win friends and influence people by throwing, it's like they burned Rav Nosson Kamenetsky's Making of a Gadol on the streets in Matastuf. They burned the book. You know, you got to be out of your mind to burn a book in public and get publicity after what Hitler did to the Jews. When you burn books, you know what was said about Hitler, when you burn books, afterwards you burn people. And we all see that problem. Excuse me?
As a quote from even from the fans of...
what's his name?
Yeah, French...
No, but Seder.
It was Heine said it.
Heine said it. I know that it doesn't begin with Hitler, but it was never more appropriate than imagine they're burning books and take a look what Yimach Shmam V'Zichrom, what they did to the Jewish people. So I'm not coming out in favor of burning Mordechai Kaplan's book. I think the Agudas Rabbanim was misguided in publicity, but you got to give credit. These three individuals, led by Professor Ginsberg, who of course was still the dominating figure till the day of his death, Professor Liebman was only an upstart at this time. Alexander Marx certainly didn't equal in learning and in Gadlut and Torah, and they came out against Mordechai Kaplan in public. And they criticized him, they didn't hold back, and they stated black and white that we understand what he wants to do, we understand he wants to attract Jews, we understand he wants to make the service more attractive, but was all and said and done, we totally disagree with his method. And as a result of this association from Kaplan Siddur, a few years later, Rabbi Silverman of Connecticut put out a conservative Siddur, which essentially was not much different than the Birnbaum Siddur that followed a few years later. Philip Birnbaum and every Orthodox shul in the country, I knew every page in Birnbaum by heart. I could tell you exactly what page Hallow was on, and Musaf of Reish Chodesh, and Musaf of the Shlosh Regalim. You remember, and you had to announce it, and we all used the Birnbaum Siddur. Who would ever dream there's so many different Siddurim today, just to elaborate the Kanayin Hara, and they still come out, the Sachs Siddur, the Rabbi Sala, this Rabbi Sachs, Rabbi Soloveitchik Siddur, the OU Siddur, the RCA Siddur, the Shokin Siddur, the Koren Siddur, Ein Baruch Hashem, Ein Ladaba Sof, we should just have Jews who will daven. Gentlemen, to summarize, JTS was an attraction. Professor Ginsberg, leaving out all the other reasons, but there were some bright guys at Yeshiva who wanted to see what's going on, what scholarship. I've learned enough Shas and Paiskim in a traditional fashion. What is this new invention that began with our leaving the ghetto? What is Chochmat Yisrael? Bernard Revel is Yeshiva's answer to JTS. The yeshiva remains a yeshiva. The learning is traditional. I don't expect Reb Nishul Shechter or Reb Michael Rosenzweig, who has a doctorate, by the way, from Bernard Revel, I don't expect Reb Meir Tversky to get up and give Shayurim with Chochmat Yisrael. They give a shiur as a shiur was given from time immemorial. But if you want Chochmat Yisrael, you have Bernard Revel Graduate School. And it's a school that has gone through a long history at times of strength, at times of weakness. Today, Baruch Hashem, it's a time of strength, and it's produced a world of scholarship over the generations. But in my humble opinion, one of the additional reasons for the establishment of Bernard Revel was the pull, the success of the seminary, when you have a faculty headed by Professor Louis Ginsberg. Gentlemen, how do I know I'm right? How do I know my description is right? Rabbi Rubin is sitting there and he's thinking, well, Rabbi Moshe Pasek, who was his classmate in Maimonides, would not agree with Rakefid's warm description of Louis Ginsberg. Okay, Rakefid, all right, how dare you talk that way? Taught at the seminary. Good question, Yitzchak. Next week, I will answer that question and show you. Shmuel, the Rebbe, may know what he's talking about. And then we will broach a topic. Wow. World War III. The new type of rabbi versus the old type of rabbi. Gentlemen, you have asked for shiur next week. I don't want to walk into an empty room. Years ago, I used to say, I'm going to go on teaching. Then I announced shiur after Shavuot. And I walked in, and boy, there was one microphone there, one bottle of water, and one person. This year, Shavuot fell early, so I figured I'll teach this week. Next week, do you guys want a shiur? Chas v'chalila, I should say no. So next Sunday, we are rolling. We're in Reb Moshe, and I introduce you to a new world, the Maritz Chayas, Chayot. And we'll see that, wow, Rakefet knows what he's talking about. He's just relating information. Yes, my dear Yitzchak.
Could you, in 4 or 5 seconds,
yeah,
explain what was the areas in which his scholarship would come up?
Yeah. His scholarship in Halachim is Bakin Shas and Paiskim. What he did, he was able to put out an edited edition of parts of the Yerushalmi. He did for parts of the Yerushalmi what Professor Liebman did for the Tosefta.
Golinkin,
he deals, for instance, with Stam Yenim. He asks, in other words, you can't drink Oyesha wine. He deals with he will not allow changes in the synagogue. You'll see in the Seder of prayer, Shabbos is Shabbos. He's not mekil to use electricity on Shabbos. He was not mekil.
He said you couldn't drink wine during prohibition. Is that him?
I don't recall if it's in. It could be, but it would seem to make sense that he wouldn't allow them to use fake array wine, but the sacramental wine, well, why couldn't you use? The government allowed it.
He said he could
use grape juice. Yeah, he could use
grape juice.
I know there were scandals in the shoes. Could be. But he was a traditionalist. He observed Tisha B'Av. There was never the slightest doubt that you can abolish Tisha B'Av, Chas v'Chalil, even though he was a Zionist, etc., etc. It's a totally traditional approach. It's in conformity with Reb Shaul Liebman. I don't think Reb Shaul Liebman would have a problem with anything that he wrote. But this was the Yerushalmi. This was his ability, scientific, words, Latin, Greek, edited text, making sense, putting sugyas together, very similar to Reb Shaul Liebman. Now, he raised money for projects in Israel like this. For instance, Rabbi Kosofsky's concordance to Shas. Before we had a computer. Are you fellows aware that a little Jew sat in Kiryat Moshe near Mekas HaRav? I can show you the shul where he davened. There's a street named after him. And he put out a concordance to every word in the Talmud and in the Tosefta. You follow? Who raised the money? Ginsburg. I'll tell you even further. No, Reb Shlomo Gorin, Reb Shlomo Gorenchik. What did he write on? His first major work was on the Yerushalmi. Who raised the money to publish it? Ginsburg. All right? In addition to all this, his most famous work is the Medrashim, the Church Fathers. Obviously, there already he's dealing with scholarship that is alien to the yeshiva world. We're not going to be concerned what the Church Fathers had to say about the Midrashim. When you take Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, he will be concerned what the Gentiles had to say about the Jews growing wine, growing grapes, vineyards, what the Gentiles had to say in their social intercourse and economic interrelationship with the Jews. You see, there it comes to the fore, because that's Chokhmat Yisrael. When you're learning Masechet Avodah Zarah, you get involved in Stam Yainam, you're not interested in that. You're interested, what's the halacha l'maisa? Rashi, Tosfot, Rabbeinu Tam, stepping on the grapes, when does it become Stam Yainam? What about Jai Mavushal? How much is Mavushal? You follow? It's two different worlds where the focus is different in accordance with your own inclinations. Okay, gentlemen, I want to show you a number of things. Number one, I had a good laugh. This is Sichat HaShavua of Chabad, which is a nice publication. Every week they have a pin-up story, right? After the Rav died, I was the pin-up boy in this Sichat HaShavua. So all I can tell you is I praise it. Flattery can get you everywhere. Now, they tell a story about a Brit Mila and how this person became from. It's a Brit Mila and of a grandchild, and they a pigeon haben of a grandchild, and the grandfather became from in Leningrad already. Who made him from? Yitzchak Kogan. Who is Rabbi Yitzchak Kogan? Remember I told you in Washington when Yitzchak Kogan arrived, the press asked Rakefet, Eichatam et Eelto. So, not thinking, I called him Hatzadik mi Leningrad. Here you see in Sichat HaShavua, HaMechuneh HaTzadik mi Leningrad. It should say copyright Aaron Rakefet. So I am correct in what I say in Washington, and I not only help young men get smicha, but I crown tzadikim. Okay, right on. Now, if anyone is interested, this is the article on Rabbi Riskin and the reading of Megillat Ruth. If anyone is interested, this is very fascinating. This is an article by a YU graduate on the trend in shuls in America, why they are getting rid of benches and are going to tables and chairs like in Shere Tefillah. And why? Because a shul today is a Beis Medrash. It's no longer a Beit Knesset. And a rabbi is no longer expected to preach. They don't want him to preach. They want him to teach. Very fascinating. Here is from Chabad. They found new manuscripts of the Rakat Shava Gaon, and there's going to be an attempt to edit them and put them out. Here is the greatest article ever. When we were kids, World Series time. You know what the World Series are? You grew up here. It's a problem. Baseball. The World Series. The highest moment. So after shul, we used to, and inevitably the World Series were Rosh Hashanah or later, there was Sukkot time. After davening, we used to go into a saloon, go into a barbershop, and look at the TV screen, the World Series, black and white. Oh, I can still remember 1947, the Yankees versus the Dodgers. Wow. No, I allowed to go into a store to look at the TV screen on Shabbos Marisayim. A graduate of this kollel, who is very famous today and owes me, it's the only Talmud I know of that didn't answer a letter of mine and didn't return a phone call. His name is Asher Lopatin, Rabbi Lopatin. Remember, recognize the name? Where is Rabbi Lopatin today? Thank you. What Chicago? Riverdale, the head of Rabbi, he's taking Rabbi Weiss's place in the shul and at the school to turn out whatever. Anyway, this is some story. In what happened was an ice cream truck came around the shul when everyone's getting out in Chicago, and the kids felt so terrible. They couldn't buy ice cream Shabbos. Around the corner from the shul is Windy City Sweets, owned by Goyim, open 7 days a week, ice cream under Hashgacha, and he worked out with the ice cream. The shul gives him $100. All the kids can come in after davening and have ice cream on Shabbos. Best synagogue kiddush ever, Shabbat ice cream accounts. So it comes back to the same shaila. Can you go into a store on Shabbos? Little Ani Rothkoff went in to see the baseball game, but I wasn't even bar mitzvah yet. I was a kid. I don't know how much I knew yet. I don't know. Malam mitzvah. I was an innocent kid. Bishogeg, ba'onis, perhaps. But not the mason. But the ice cream, you think about it. Now, this is the OU Passover guide. And I have to say, I was very impressed by the articles that explain Yiddishkeit on a very simple basis, but everything there. Above all, there's an article by Mendel, Nachum, you know, and he writes a beautiful article explaining for the first time, I understand clearly why if you eat Beis Yosef glatt, you can't eat Hungarian glatt, okay? Three levels, kosher, glatt, kosher, OU type, Beit Yosef, and it's all with the sichat. Beis Yosef, you don't play any games. If there's a sicha, throw it away. The glatt, if the sicha can be easily removed, fine. Regular kosher, you even hack a little bit to get rid of the sicha. Now, what's interesting, the article says that most animals today are Beis Yosef. Why? It doesn't pay for them to play with sichat. That it's, you know, every I always said there's no thing as a kosher slaughterhouse. You rent space in a treif in a regular slaughterhouse, and all the animals that aren't good, you push treif. So you're not going to waste time when money is honey. Money is time. You're not going to waste time. Excuse me.
I'm not here.
No, Israel's a different story. Finally, I have to say, I never gave credit. I didn't know about it. But I have to say, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's 80th birthday, what a beautiful celebration in the Gush. And they had Sheyurim concomitantly in different rooms. All his six children gave Sheyurim. And boy, I have to, it's overwhelming what Rav Aaron accomplished here. And they did a beautiful video of his life, which is available on YouTube. Just I was given a link, but I imagine if you just punch in Rabbi Lichtenstein, you'll get to it, a beautiful video of his life. And finally, I say to the old-time Israelis, I'll say something interesting. Until the last decade, Rabbi Aaron was not part of the mainstream. They always viewed him, you know, an American, an outsider. Notice this last decade, he's been totally integrated into the Israeli religious Zionist scene. It's very fascinating. I have my own theories why. It's both changes in Rav Aaron and the recognition beyond us that we Americans did something here. And I end off by quoting a Gemara at the end of Megillah, Atidin Bate Knesiyot Shebabavo La'alot Atza. That Gemara repeats itself, by the way, in Midrashim, where they're very intriguing. I don't want to sound like Bernard Rebel Graduate School now, but some Bate Medrash La'alot Atza. And I always ask the question, what does that mean? What, are we crazy? We're going to take apart a building and bring it here? By the way, the one building that was brought here, they didn't depend upon the Israeli Arabs to build it. In Ranana, there's a shul that they brought over workers from South Africa to put the building up after they disassembled it in South Africa. They didn't trust that. They put the workers up in hotels. It's some story. Till then, it is a beautiful building. But you're going to take, I mean, you imagine, I see you're going to take the Moorish temple of YU, take it apart into a million different pieces, ship it over here, you wind up walking on the ceiling. But what the Gemara means, I see in Batek Nisachab above, in every Gullus we developed ideas. And those ideas, when we come back home, and Kanayin Harov, 6 million halachic Jews here, it's overwhelming. We come back home, every Gullus brings its best ideas, and the land absorbs it. We become a synthesis, a symphony of magnificent achievement. And they recognize Rav Aaron has what they give. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'danya.